You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A settlement has been reached in a year-long impasse that will allow a union election to go forward for 1,800 service workers at Yale New Haven Hospital. The victory was achieved through the cooperation of city officials, SEIU District 1199, and a community organization that demanded a seat at the table where the quality of life was at stake. Melinda Tuhus reports from New Haven.
Bill Meyerson is a spokesman for District 1199 SEIU, which has been trying to organize workers at the hospital for 8 years. He says the union is very satisfied with the accord, even though it calls for a secret ballot election. The union had been pushing instead for a card count to verify workers' support for the union, charging that elections run by the NLRB give employers an advantage. But the accord provides a more level playing field than NLRB rules, Meyerson says.
Neither party can disparage the other. The campaign must be factual. The NLRB does not prohibit disparagement or lies. For instance, okay, just to give you an example, there can be no what is known as one-on-one anti-union meetings between supervisors and the people that they employ. The employer is prohibited from assisting anti-union activity by employees.
Lastly, Meyerson says, disputes will be resolved by an independent arbitrator rather than the NLRB.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Roger Toussaint, the president of Transit Workers Union Local 100 in New York City, went to jail Monday after his supporters marched across the Brooklyn Bridge in a send-off for him. A judge sentenced Toussaint to a 10-day jail term for striking in December in defense of pensions. The union was also fined $2.5 million for that strike, which broke New York's Taylor Law. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney was among the union leaders and members supporting Toussaint as he headed off to jail. Toussaint says the Taylor Law is biased against labor, and he says the transit authority in New York City engaged in illegal behavior that was not punished. He said the TWU will go to court if the transit authority's board doesn't vote at its board meeting on Wednesday on a new contract for transit workers. In a re-vote, TWU members approved a tentative agreement that they had rejected in December. That agreement ended the strike. The transit authority, though, says its board will not vote on that agreement on Wednesday.
Here's the WIN Economic Report. Have the recent tax cuts helped most Americans keep more of their income? The Tax Policy Center studied the question. They found that after-tax incomes of the top 1% of taxpayers were 4.6% higher in 2005 than they would have been without the tax cuts. Incomes of the middle 20% were 2.6% higher, and incomes for the bottom 20% were 0.3% higher. This means that the Bush administration tax cuts still widened the gap between rich and poor and made the tax system less progressive.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. My sincere and humble apologies for last night. I think we'll be okay.
Mr. Kincaid, I just climbed up on your pole and fixed them internet thingies you was complaining about. I think he's going to work tonight.
Oh, God, I hope it does. Certainly, there was lots of time on the phone today and playing with all the little dials and knobs and slides and stuff here. But I think we got it worked out. I have no idea what was going on last night, but I think we do, in fact, have it. Oh, God, knock wood. Yeah, we got it licked. And that's good, because today was rather interesting, don't you think? Dear Leader came out of his secure, undisclosed location, out of his spider hole, or wherever it is reptilian little critters like George Bush live, with a new energy policy. Yeah, he really, really did. And, I captured it. I've got it here. We're going to listen to some of it. Now, the highlights of the speech, as reported by ABC News, President Bush on Tuesday ordered a temporary... we'll get to that. The moves came as political pressure intensified on Bush to do something about gasoline prices that are expected to stay high throughout the... this was, of course, by Nedra Pickler. She's another one of those stenographers for Bush. Easing the environment rules will allow refiners greater flexibility in providing oil supplies, since they will not have to use certain additives, such as ethanol, to meet clean air standards. this from the gang that gave us the Clear Skies Initiative and said, yeah, we're going to pump a little more crap into the air, and that'll make them cleaner, and you'll be breathing better. And so what if your kids have to live on asthma medication? Those inhalers don't come cheap, and it'll be good for the bottom line of the pharmaceutical industry. Jesus Christ. President, the Democrats in the past have urged higher taxes on fuel and price caps to control fuel expenses, but he said neither approach works.
Really? It doesn't?
Huh. Well, that just beats the stuffing out of me, because, and let me scratch my funny little head here. Yeah, what was gas under Bill Clinton? How much did gasoline cost? It wasn't $3 a gallon, was it? No, I don't think so. Bush said higher energy prices are disturbing. Oh, that sorry, sad son of a seventh son of a syphilitic sea cook. Higher gas prices are disturbing. Yeah, you know, when you're making a choice between food and medicine, and then you add gasoline into the mix. Yeah, that's disturbing, George. I mean, why don't we just go ahead and complete the circle and send him to a grocery store so that he can look at the barcode scanner like his daddy did and go, what the hell is that? Oh, he makes me crazy. Let's see, well, you know, if we're going to do this, let's do this. I'm going to go out on a limb and see if we can play some audio. Now, for those of you who grew up in church, do you remember that game you used to play where you just sort of flip through the hymnal or flip through the Bible there in the pews because you were bored out of your mind listening to the gospel sharp and see if you could drag some meaning out of whatever, you know, you shut your eyes and you flip through and you stop with your finger and you go, oh, well, I'll be darned. Jesus wept. You remember how you used to play that game when you were a kid? Well, we're going to play that with George Bush's speech this evening, if you don't mind. So, okay. I'm standing. Go.
When immediately we can signal to people we're serious about increasing supply is to stop making purchases or deposits to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve for a short period of time. The record department...
Wait a minute. Just wait a cotton pick a minute. Stop making deposits to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve? That's his answer? That's it? I mean, that's the thing at the end of the in-laws with the Alan Arkin and Peter Falk, where they're about to be shot by the Latin American dictator, and Alan Arkin says, okay, give us your plan. Vince, give us the plan. What's the next plan? Plan? There's no plan. That's it. Well, do something. General, as you know, this man is a dentist. And if you shoot him, many Hispanic children in New York City will go without appropriate dental care. That's it? That's the plan? This is it. We're going to lower prices by not putting gasoline into our strategic reserves. Well, that tells me, A, that there is room in the strategic oil reserves, which begs the question, where's the fuel been going that was supposed to go into the strategic oil reserves? And then there's the question of, if it hasn't been going into the strategic oil reserves, and now it's not going to go into the strategic oil reserves, where the hell has it been going? Oh, Georgia, you got some splaining to do. Let's try this again. I got to try to make some horse sense out of this. This is just nuts.
One immediate way we can signal to people we're serious about increasing supply is to stop making purchases or deposits to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve for a short period of time. Directed the Department of Energy to defer filling the reserve this summer. Our strategic reserve is sufficiently large enough to guard against any major supply disruption over the next few months. So by deferring deposits until the fall, we'll leave a little more oil on the market. Every little bit helps. We also need to ensure that there are not needless restrictions on our ability to get gasoline to the pump. Under federal air quality laws, some areas of the country are required to use fuel blend called reformulated gasoline. Now, as you well know, this year we're undergoing a rapid transition in the primary ingredient in reformulated gas from MTBE to ethanol. And I appreciate the role the ethanol producers are playing to meet this challenge.
Oh, I'll bet you do, George. I'll just bet you do. Because, see, I've been meaning about that. That little book that I mentioned, Michael Pollan, The Omnivore's Dilemma. Oh, yeah, it's just chock full of information about corn producers and ethanol. And Cargill and Archer Daniels, Midland and Monsanto, who, incidentally, give just sickening boatloads of money to the Republican Party. Oh, yeah, there's more here than meets the eye. But I'm the first one in the world to admit that I'm no math genius, so I guess that means that to a certain extent I'm no economic genius either. Hell, I'm no genius. But somehow or another, I'm not willing to buy into this notion that he's put forward that not putting fuel into the strategic oil reserves is somehow going to make ExxonMobil or their captive refineries feel a little more charitable toward you and me and cut prices during the peak driving months. That much economics I do damned well understand. I understand that they like to make their money when we need it most. Conversely speaking, that's why if for instance, you heat on home heating oil or propane, the propane and the home heating oil is cheaper in the summer when you ain't buying it. I mean, are we all on the same page on this one? Is this as crazy to you as it is to me? Do you remember a year or so ago when people were saying, hey, George, how about letting a little bit of fuel out of the strategic petroleum reserves so that we can give Americans a break on these god-awful $2 a gallon gasoline prices. Do you remember that? I remember that. And he said, no, because releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserves would put America at risk. And it would not help fuel prices in the long term or the short term. I remember that. I was paying attention that day. So now by some miracle, now I'm supposed to buy into this Rube Goldberg notion that it's going to get better? Because we're not putting fuel into the Strategic Petroleum Reserves that we can't release, because it won't help gas prices to release it anyway, but it will help if we don't put it there in the first place. My head hurts. This ugly little man makes my head hurt. Well, it's coming up on 16 minutes past the hour, as far as I can tell. I would suggest we take a little break. We regroup, get our heads together, and figure out just how stupid these stupid, stupid people think we are. The phone number you know, it's 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears: HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen to me, Marvin Hamlisch. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Okay. Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Okay, so I had to stop and look at the exclusive photo of the machine Bob Kincaid used to fix Skype. that courtesy of our tech god, Peter, in the chat room. I wish I had one of those things. Might work a little bit better. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, and I'm in a good mood. How about you? Okay, I'll take that as rep. Listen. If you go back, and by the way, one of the best bargains out there, I despise CNN, okay? We all know that. But one of the best bargains going out there is for the low price of $24.95, you can get CNN Pipeline, and you get their unedited video feeds as long as you've got a reasonable internet connection. And you can watch this stuff as it happens, even if they're not broadcasting it at the time. And it comes in really, really handy sometimes. And that's how I was able to get the audio today. Oopsie, he's giving away the secrets again. Get the audio today of Dear Leader giving his major speech on energy policy. So, you know, $24.95, not such a bad deal. Not that CNN needs any more money. But at any rate, in this speech, it happened on enough occasions that my pink little ears perked up and got me a little bit mad. Because, among other things, Dear Leader decided we are no longer the American people. We're not the people to him. Of course, we've never been people to him, and you know that. But he's getting kind of brash and out there about it. Because today, in this speech, on a number of occasions, he referred to us generically as the consumer. The consumer cannot, it is disturbing to see the consumer have to face these prices. And the consumer does not need to be price gouged. It's disturbing. Pardon me, George, buddy, pal, George. I'm not a consumer. I mean, if you know how it is with me in language. If you just sit down and start thinking about what words mean, You can get into a whole different world pissed off. And that one just slipped right under my fingernails. Consumer. George, I'm not a consumer. Termites are consumers. That's what they do. They consume. They eat, they excrete, and they die. And somewhere in the middle of all that, they consume things. Do you realize that referring to a human being as a consumer negates everything from cogito ergo sum and René Descartes forward? When we allow people like George Bush to call us consumer, I think therefore I am goes right out the damn window. As does, I don't know, how about that line from the Elephant Man, I'm not an animal, out the window. Because when you think of human beings with whom you share a county, a city, a state, a nation, as my fellow consumers. We are considered consumers by the people who want us to consume. I might consume some things, but it is not, by God, the definition of who I am. I am the sum of my parts, as are you, and not merely a walking shell for one of those parts. I laugh, I cry, I hurt. I'm terribly, terribly ticklish. I get terrible sunburns. I love to read. I love to pretend to play a guitar, pretend even more at playing golf. And somewhere in the middle of that, once in a while, okay, out on the golf course, I'll, you know, at the turn. I'm not elitist about it. Everybody should be able to play golf. Everybody should. It's a great game. It's a long, great game you play between, you know, it's 4 inches between your ears, not 340 yards from tip to tip. You know, so with the turn between hole 9 and hole 10, I will consume a hot dog. I am not, by God, a consumer. I listened to that in that speech today, and that kind of elitist horse hooey coming out of that wicked little pig-eyed, chug-eared lout just gets all over me. The consumer. You, how dare you refer me as the consumer? Go to one of the factory cattle feedlots in the Midwest, where the steak that you might eat next month is standing fetlocks deep, or whatever it is cows have on the bottom of their legs, in manure, eating a steady stream of corn, standing in one place. That is the consumer. It is the sum and total of its existence is to consume and get fat so we can eat it. Do you understand that George Bush sees you and me the same damned way? We exist to consume the crap that his corporate pals put out there for us. And it is disgusting. I mean, why? I hope you understand the spirit that this is offered in. There is not a hell of a lot more difference in referring to me as a consumer than there is in referring to me as Whitey or Cracker. It is a lowest common denominator insult that takes in none of my or your or our humanity and treats us as nothing more than a hog fattening at the trough. And I hate it. A little memo to future Democratic candidates. Don't talk about consumers. Talk about people. Talk about human beings. Talk about the guy who is making maybe $5.50 an hour and therefore has to work for 2 hours just to buy the gasoline to get him from home to work and back. Screw being a consumer. We're at the bottom of the hour. Let's take a break. You know what this is. This is Head On. You know how to reach the program. 877, the number 4, Head On, and 877-443-2366. When we come back, your phone call. I'm Bob.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored, hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At Children's Research, we care about children, working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
When it rains, all my friends go away.
God doesn't like me anymore.
The wind could come, take your house. Santa won't know where to find me. Mommy scared the sky.
What's going on in the mind of a child who's lived through a hurricane?
You can drown in your bed if you fall asleep.
A lot. Talk to them. Reassure them. We can help. Call 1-800-789-2647 to make sure they move on healthy and happy. That's 1-800-789-2647. Trained and caring people are ready to assist you 24 hours a day. It's confidential and free. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Feeling very mellow. I'm Bob. And this is Head On. And that last PSA, the one about from the Department of Health and Human Resources about children who have lived through a hurricane, Katrina and stuff, that's heartbreaking. That is truly heartbreaking. But it's that line from the little girl says, you can drown in your sleep. That's true. But I'll be quite honest, I have to wonder if anybody at the Bush Administration Department of Health and Human Resources has ever bothered to ask any of the little children, say, down Route 3, who go to Marsh Fork Elementary School in Raleigh County, and every time it rains, they wonder if they're going to die. If Massey's sludge dam is finally going to give away, and instead of 4 billion gallons of poisonous goo down on top of them. I wonder. No, I don't wonder. I know. I know they haven't. The Bush administration doesn't give a tinker's damn about those children. The state government of West Virginia doesn't give a damn about those children. And I'm sorry, that just, these things occurred to me. The children of Katrina, any other hurricane, a tornado, a natural disaster, my God, they need help. But the sad thing is, so do the kids who are living under a man-made. This is some freak of nature that the Bush administration didn't give a damn about taking precautions for. What's hanging over the heads of children down Route 3 in Raleigh County, West Virginia, is man-made and man-encouraged and man-lusted after. And Wells Fargo Bank is the primary source of funding for Massey Energy that helps build those god-awful sludge heaps. And there are stockholders in Wells Fargo Bank, and there are stockholders in Massey Energy, and they do not care. So, sorry. I got carried. Let's go to the phones. I haven't heard from Gary in a long, long time. He's with us. Hey, Gary, you head on.
Hey, Bob, it's a voice from your long, dark AM past. How are you tonight?
How are you?
You're striking a lot of chords.
Oh, thank you. This is what it is, I guess.
You were talking about the way the politicians treat us as a resource to be managed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've long thought that. And of course, they've been doing that for centuries. And I'm kind of losing zero on the voice. And
no, I'm right here. I mean, we're still connected. Don't worry about it.
Okay, I'm not hearing you that well. And also, you're talking about the big sludge dam over there, and you just kind of wonder what happened. How come decisions like that over a threat like that aren't something to be dealt with locally? And really, they're not. I mean, not even the state government controls it. It really goes right down to the federal people. So if you've got a problem right next to you, you can't handle or deal with it locally. You have to go through the federal people. That's how much they've centralized power in this country.
Well, but centralized power can work to a certain extent, Gary. If we want it to work, what you saw with Katrina is a function of profound negligence. You didn't see that when the Clinton administration was elevating FEMA to a cabinet level office. Bush got in, he turned and he's turned FEMA into a low rent subdivision of the Office of Homeland Security, and we see the cost of that.
Yeah, well, they've tremendously mismanaged it, but. You know, it's getting to the point nowadays where everything is getting to be mismanaged everywhere. It's not just the government doing it.
Oh, no, it's not just the government. But we got to start somewhere. We got to fix something somehow. And I think that's a good place to start.
Well, I don't know what the solution to it is. I think ultimately it'll just have to all bust apart and fall apart. I really don't think a society that's based on nothing but resource exploitation can long endure. It might go on for quite a while, and I believe that's what our society is based on. I think that's what Western civilization is based on. Just resource exploitation, continued growth. I know you've seen some of the stuff that I've sent you about more or less what we call the population bomb. It just can't go on forever.
No, quite frankly, it cannot. But the question is, The question, Gary, is how do we change it? And we change it with our own attitudes. We're not. You're right. To a certain extent, we're not going to change it institutionally until we change it ourselves.
Well, you're saying a lot there, Bob. Institutionally, I don't think it can be changed. I think it's just going to have to crash, and that's going to be left to us to change it. And then that's where we have to change our attitudes, like you're talking about. That's where it comes in. But institutionally, I just don't see it happening at all.
Well, like I mentioned, you shot me an email, and I mentioned this book, and I mentioned it on the air a couple of times. You know, they should pay me for this. This when you look at the institutionalized governmental prostitution that goes to the factory farm industry, and then you look at all the things that they fractionalize out of the corn, for instance. We are literally a corn fed nation, and
courtesy of ADM, of course.
ADM, Cargill, Monsanto.
Those guys will go down in history as being worse than the criminals of the Third Reich before it's over with.
They may very well bring on a world famine that will make biblical stuff look puny.
Exactly. Yeah. Most people just don't have even a shadow of an idea what Monsanto is doing right now with our seed supplies.
Yeah. Well, laws have been passed in Iraq, Gary, that mandate that Iraqi farmers must grow American genetically modified wheat.
I'll tell you what, now if that isn't 1984 for you, I don't know what is. Do you know they've got a program right now, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they want to ID every single farm animal in America. They want to put these microchips in them and everything. Did you know that's going on right now?
Oh, yeah, the RFID chips. You know, you can buy an RFID chip and have it implanted. It's about the size of a grain of rice. You can have it implanted in your dog.
They want to do that for every... livestock animal in America, including chickens. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, and sooner or later, you'll wind up swallowing one of those because, you know, we know how it is with the chicken processing industry and the beef processing industry. You don't have to put it on the label. You know,
keep eating that Walmart chicken, I think it'll happen.
God.
I know two people who've got sick off Walmart chicken in the last month.
Well, it's such a nasty process.
Well, it is, you know the process that Walmart uses. They go to their suppliers every year, and they say, okay, we want to buy it 5% cheaper this year. And I mean, you're familiar with that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they've got to cut somewhere, and they're cutting quality. Although I don't shop there, my better half does, and she brought home some hamburger the other day, and I swear to goodness, you could have wrung out enough water out of the hamburger.
Oh yeah,
battleship. It was amazing. I've never seen hamburgers like that in my life.
Did you see the label on the hamburger, Gary?
Well, I know that they're not. They don't have their own meat cutters anymore. It comes from some central source somewhere. But they're adding water to the hamburger. There's no doubt about it.
Well, exactly. It says ground beef with beef flavor added. If you read that label very carefully, what in hen's name does that mean? They're watering down the meat. You know, this is sleazy as a bartender who waters his liquor.
It's the same thing. I mean, I have forbidden Walmart meat to ever enter this house again just because of that experience. It was just absolutely disgusting. Plus, the people I know have got sick off Walmart chicken. And, you're probably aware of this. You know, if you chew chewing gum, and I chew a lot of gum, if you look on the ingredients, it'll say chewing gum base.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I read what chewing gum base really is. It's plastic.
Oh, I'm not surprised. It used to be chicle.
Yeah, chicle. That's what chewing gum's made out of. Anybody knows that. It's our age.
Not more.
Yeah, now they're making our chewing gum out of plastic. Now, who wants to get a mouthful of plastic? Nobody. So the government allows them to call it chewing gum base, and they've done that literally with hundreds, if not thousands, of products. Allow them to change the name a little bit. You know, they're calling muskrat marsh rabbit and all that. You're buying the can in the store.
Well, I don't know if you were told this when you were growing up, Gary, but I remember my mom told you, don't swallow your chewing gum. It stays in your stomach for 7 years.
Yeah, well, with this stuff, it's probably radioactive, too. I wouldn't doubt it.
Not in the least. We're being embalmed from the inside out. You know, because you got to remember, George Bush... while he was governor of Texas, got ensnared in a great big, dirty, dirty controversy with some corporate burial industry group that had given him scads of money, who were actually, they owned some, I think, Jewish cemeteries in Florida. And they, what they were doing is they were digging people up and throwing them in the swamp and putting new people in holes. And he got subpoenaed in that case, and none other than Alberto Gonzalez got him out of having to appear in court. Because, that scandal alone made Whitewater look like, well, what Whitewater was, nothing.
Well, Bob, you got legal background there, and for a brief period of time in my life, I actually sold cemetery plots.
Mm-hmm.
What surprised me is I found out that when you buy a cemetery plot, you buy the right of interment. You're not actually buying that plot. So legally, after you're buried in that plot, they can come in later and actually take you out of that plot and put you somewhere else as long as they inter you. And there's nothing you can do about it because they have actually followed the letter of the contract.
Right, but these son of the guns were just throwing the bodies in the swamp.
Yeah, they didn't even bother to. Well, they could call that internment. Well, they could. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny. They actually, they could make that argument. They could say, well, they're interred. They're just in a swamp. That's all.
Well,
I mean,
that's why these guys do this.
That's why they separated the mineral rights from the land. I mean, these are just sleight of hand artists. Like your imagination could just go wild thinking about. I mean, I know the other day I almost bought an insurance policy coming to mail, one of those little flyers, and I got to reading it and come to find out it's an accidental death policy. Now, how many people would buy those policies thinking they bought, say, a $50,000 life insurance policy? They die and their spouse goes to collect on the insurance policy, come to find out it's an accidental death policy because they didn't
see
the fine print.
Oh, and that's a whole insurance racket, though. I mean, you've seen these cancer policies.
Yeah.
They pay off. It's the right. You will wind up paying more than they'll ever pay. There are actually people at one point who sold insurance policies. This was at the beginning of the space age. Gary, the insurance companies sold policies to people who were afraid of being hit by pieces of a falling Sputnik. And they made a myth doing it.
It was actually a very small satellite.
Well, yeah. But, you know, they were preying on what people were afraid of. Now it's cancer.
Yeah, if you got hit by Sputnik, God is definitely not on your side because he sent it directly
yeah.
to you.
Yeah, because somebody's got a scope on top of your head at that point.
Yeah. Exactly.
Gary, so good to talk to you, and I'm gonna bust out some information here. Congratulations on your nuptials.
Well, thank you, Bob. I tell you, I've got the most wonderful woman in the world. Of course, next to Agnes, but, you know, we'd argue about that. But
I understand. Thanks so much. So good to hear from you.
Thank you, Bob. Nice listening to your show again.
All right. Thanks for being there. Take care.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back to the phone. You know how to get on board, and we're going to make this work. I really promise that we will and we can. This is Ed. The phone number is 877-4 and 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
She used to do a topless down at the Sorry Dock with tassels on her wanted. She did a terrific job of raising all the eyebrows of every lunchtime mob. She went with all the tossers who kick about a ball. They say their clubs are greatest and she has kissed them all at the Arndale Centre. She's up against the wall. I can't name names for that's no cricket. I can't name names that would fall.
Hey, I'm Bonnie Raitt. Remember how excited you were as a kid to go back to school at the end of the summer? Seeing old friends, making new ones, getting new books in a new locker, a clean slate. And music class, that special room where you went to sing and perform with your friends and learn all sorts of interesting stuff about great composers and instruments and different kinds of music. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. to help spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. Know what? I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them, and make sure they get involved with music in school this year.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Thanks for being here. Let's go straight back to the phone. Our good friend Sue in the United Kingdom is with us.
Hello?
Oh, Sue.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I'm hearing you fine, thank you.
Oh, excellent. I had to call because your speech that you gave just now.
Yes.
Governments treat the people. I think they do look on us as a commodity. They want us to work until we die so we can buy products to enhance their. And I'm fed up with it.
I go back. Did you ever see the film that's an early 70s thing, science fiction thing, Sue? Did you ever see Soylent Green? Charles Dustin,
Green,
Richie
yeah.
Mountain? Yeah, I think we've gotten there.
Yeah, and I mean, at the moment, I buy all organic. And you know when you cook a joint of meat and most of the time shrinks away to nothing because there's so much water in it? And I find that now, since I've been getting the organic meat, same size.
Well, that's the thing. The reading that I'm doing suggests that even the organic issue is, to a certain extent, not what it would appear to be.
And oh, it's not.
It's been infiltrated by the giant corporate megalopolies as well. So, they sell you organic milk and they say, oh, you know, cows roaming, happy free. No, they're a big barn and they never move and they sit there and they eat organic corn. That's the only difference.
Well, I source all of delivery scheme over here, and I source all my dairy, my meat products, and all of my fruit and veg that I can't grow myself, and none of it's air freighted, and it's all, we have what we call the Soil Association over here that certifies our organic food, and they're pretty on the ball with it. But I do know that over there that saying that, in certain circumstances, they can add this or It's disgraceful.
Well, it is. I'm by no means a member of PETA or anything like that. But there are things about consumerism and ways that we have that we are marketed to and demanded by the corporatists. Things we're demanded to do with our daily lives that are offensive in the extreme. When you consider, and the only way you can get to that point, Sue, is if you think of the human being as nothing but a consumer of goods.
Well, that's the problem. We got BSC in this country because they were feeding dead animals to cows.
Yes. So we seem to be breaking up for some reason or another, dear. I hope we can talk again. We'll get this problem licked. And I hope we'll talk again very soon.
You're doing a great job, Bob.
Well, thank you very much.
Great to be in there. Okay, bye.
I'd like to be a little better. You have a wonderful morning, okay? Bye now. All right. Well, if you're on the line, please stay on the line. We're going to do some fixing up and so forth. The news is coming after that. We'll go straight back to the phones. That I do promise. We're going to take the break now. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'm Bonnie Raitt. Remember how excited you were as a kid to go back to school at the end of the summer? Seeing old friends, making new ones, getting new books in a new locker, a clean slate. And music class, that special room where you went to sing and perform with your friends and learn all sorts of interesting stuff about great composers and instruments and different kinds of music. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They help spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. Know what? I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them and make sure they get involved with music in school this year.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A settlement has been reached in a year-long impasse that will allow a union election to go forward for 1,800 service workers at Yale New Haven Hospital. The victory was achieved through the cooperation of city officials, SEIU District 1199, and a community organization that demanded a seat at the table where the quality of life was at stake. Melinda Tuhus reports from New Haven.
Bill Meyerson is a spokesman for District 1199 SEIU, which has been trying to organize workers at the hospital for 8 years. He says the union is very satisfied with the accord, even though it calls for a secret ballot election. The union had been pushing instead for a card count to verify workers' support for the union, charging that elections run by the NLRB give employers an advantage. But the accord provides a more level playing field than NLRB rules, Meyerson says.
Neither party can disparage the other. A campaign must be factual. NLRB does not prohibit disparagement or lies. For instance, okay, just to give you an example, there can be no what is known as one-on-one anti-union meetings between supervisors and the people that they employ. the employer is prohibited from assisting anti-union activity by employees.
Lastly, Meyerson says, disputes will be resolved by an independent arbitrator rather than the NLRB.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Roger Toussaint, the president of Transit Workers Union Local 100 in New York City, went to jail Monday after his supporters marched across the Brooklyn Bridge in a send-off for him. A judge sentenced Toussaint to a 10-day jail term for striking in December in defense of pensions. The union was also fined $2.5 million for that strike, which broke New York's Taylor Law. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney was among the union leaders and members supporting Toussaint as he headed off to jail. Toussaint says the Taylor Law is biased against labor, and he says the transit authority in New York City engaged in illegal behavior that was not punished. He said the TWU will go to court if the Transit Authority's board doesn't vote at its board meeting on Wednesday on a new contract for transit workers. In a re-vote, TWU members approved a tentative agreement that they had rejected in December. That agreement ended the strike. The Transit Authority, though, says its board will not vote on that agreement on Wednesday.
Here's the Wynn Economic Report. Have the recent tax cuts helped most Americans keep more of their income? The Tax Policy Center studied the question. They found that after-tax incomes of the top 1% of taxpayers were 4.6% higher in 2005 than they would have been without the tax cuts. Incomes of the middle 20% were 2.6% higher, and incomes for the bottom 20% were 0.3% higher. This means that the Bush administration tax cuts still widened the gap between rich and poor and made the tax system less progressive.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, you're back with Head On with Bob Kincaid. And Bob will be back on the line in just a couple of seconds. We're going to go to the phones. We've got David from Maine. Hi, David.
Hello, Agnes. How are you? I guess you're taking over for 2 minutes.
Just for a couple of seconds, yeah.
Just for a couple of seconds.
Yeah, trying to help out.
Well, I just wanted to talk about the obvious thing about the gas prices. And I heard somebody made a suggestion that nobody should buy gas from the two top tiers of Exxon and Mobil and try to avoid. And then they said try to avoid, everybody try to avoid buying that. And if it was a campaign that was religiously fought on those types of guidelines, they said we would dramatically see gas going down. My only concern with that is how do you start a campaign like that, and how do you make sure it's not Exxon and Mobil? And,
well, it's kind of hard to do.
Yeah, I know, and I think part of the problem is that America, for the most part, to be honest, it's become a selfish nation. And I think the part of the problem is they don't want to put the time and energy into that. They just want the problem solved without having to do anything. And I think that's part of the curse of the Western civilization that we've raised up. And this is part of the things we have to deal with. And I take issue with people saying that Americans are stupid. Now, I don't think it's that, because you can find any person who you would think that would be stupid. They can list you the sports scores from the Chicago Bulls of 1986.
Right.
Or NASCAR stats. Now imagine if they took the NASCAR stats to legal terms and what's going on with the government. I think the problem is that there needs to be more youth involvement through the money needs to be put through some of these really progressive think tanks. Someone brought up an interesting point on another radio show, and they said, you know, one of the problems is that there is no big part of America. One of the problems is there is no urban think tank, and if you think about it. That does make sense. There is not one that you can point to and go, oh, so that's, and partly I think why a lot of people don't care is because is this constant that there is this disconnect that people think that the kids today are stupid or whatnot. And I think it's just different types of intelligence, basically. I think it's a myth that people are purporting that people and all people of America are stupid. And I don't know, I kind of take issue with the fact when people say this as, like, just write off everybody. And
well, you can't do that, but I think Bob's better at answering these questions than I am. He's back.
Okay.
Hey, David.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Pretty good. You're sounding good, and hopefully I am too. I don't know.
You're sounding like a PsyOps robot, but that's okay.
Well, I'm trying, man.
Yeah. I'm already on to you, Bob. I know it's a PsyOps Pentagon program. I'm going to Alex Jones tomorrow.
What you'll find out, Alex will tell you that I'm actually the bastard son of Max Headroom.
So, I'd like to talk about something that I know that you'd probably be interested. How do you separate reality from a myth?
Well, I mean, if you—that's an age-old question. The best place to get a handle from an intellectual standpoint is to start with Joseph Campbell's series on the power of myth.
Right.
He's done the best, as has Robert Bly. He and Robert Bly probably have the best handle on modern mythology of anyone working on the issue out there. What in particular, though, were you aiming at?
The reason why I say this is obviously with the announcement of the Zarqawi tape.
Oh, yeah.
And here's my problem with it. And I wonder, is the Pentagon stupid? Because I want to talk about this. In the Washington Post, just 3 weeks ago, they said they were spending $100 million on the Zarqawi deception program. Did you catch that article?
Yeah, I saw that. And the fact of the matter is this Zarqawi tape... when I saw the posting of it on CNN's website, I'm a little behind on this. It is purported to be video and audio.
It's 30 minutes, Bob.
But I mean, it's video and audio.
30 minutes of video.
That's what I'm getting at. This dude is this is a one-legged man. I mean, this is something out of The Fugitive, Dave.
And you know what's funny, Bob? I hope the NSA and everybody's listening, because that video looks like it was shot in a timeshare. I'm not kidding.
Well, do you remember the beheading of Michael Berg? Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember that, and that's a good point.
Do you remember the plastic chairs in that, Dave?
Yes.
The same plastic chairs that were more than evident in the photos from Abu Ghraib.
I didn't see the video. I've only saw the still. I don't have any interest in seeing the graphic stuff. It's kind of disturbing to me. But actually, Nick Berg's father was on the radio, and he was talking about how he really hated what the government was doing under his name in Iraq, and I thought that was really admirable of him. I don't know if you know this, but he's running for political office.
Yes, he is. He's running as a Green in what, Delaware?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I wish him very well, but no, the point I was trying to make, you said it looked like the Zarqawi tape was shot in a timeshare. I agree.
Have you seen the stills to that?
I've seen a couple of the stills, yeah.
Of the new one? Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like pretty nice digs.
I would like to ask the Pentagon one question. Why is he showing his face now, and why is the lighting so good?
Well, I know.
But
some of this, again, it begs the question that I asked earlier. How stupid do these Republicans think that we are, David? Whether it's the issue that I raised about the fact that a year ago we couldn't release fuel from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve because it wouldn't help gas prices, but now it's going to help gas prices if we don't put it in?
And here's the thing that I don't think these Republicans and these people in the Pentagon don't understand. Americans are a selfish creature for the most part because we've been so westernized. They're not going to care if Zarqawi or Satan's back. The gas prices are up.
I know, I understand you didn't see the point was not about watching the Nick Burr beheading. The point was about the furniture on set, as it were, just
yeah.
Like the set of this Zarqawi videotape. The chairs, the plastic chairs in the Nick Burr video are available at your local Walmart. And they just happened to be the same damn chairs that showed up at the same time when the Abu Ghraib photos were faking.
So are you saying you think they faked the whole thing?
Oh, no, I think Nick Berg is quite dead.
But are you saying that video was faked?
The video looked like it was dummied up, but more than anything else, it looked like the video was done at Abu Ghraib. And that's just, you know, that's horrifying at a level that I can scarcely contemplate.
I'm just perplexed that they actually put up a 30-minute video. Like, now people are going to be able to study, like, every single little detail in the video. And the lighting is so good when you see it.
Well, yeah, I haven't been able to watch the entire thing. I saw a few seconds of it. But you're right about the lighting. You're right about the set. Now, technology is widely available now. There's no doubt about that.
It makes you wonder if the Pentagon's intelligence has dumbed down over the years.
Well, there's nothing to wonder about there, David. The Pentagon's intelligence has dumbed down over the years. That's why we were believing the ravings of an alcoholic madman who was codenamed Curveball as our reason to go into Iraq. And everybody's acting. This is the thing. You knew about this. I knew about this. Most of the liberal left or progressives or whatever the hell you want to call us knew about this before the war started. That intelligence agencies around the world were saying there are no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Now the mainstream media is out there. I caught it walking through the living room an hour or so ago. MSNBC breathlessly on Hardball announcing. The White House ignored warnings from international intelligence that there were no WMDs in Iraq. Jesus Christ, what am I? Are we living in a separate reality, Dave?
I think what it is it's like that book, Into the Buzzsaw. There's so many stories get killed, and there's so many things that you can only say on the air, or they'll edit you out, or they'll fire you. And I think everything has a timeline of where they want a story to go and whatnot. And there's a lot of suppression of information when it comes to corporations. And I guess I can understand if I was a news broadcaster, because they're going to shut the cameras off on you, or they're going to pull a dodge on you if you try to start telling some of the news that you just got in, which is kind of funny, because on the other hand, somebody like Matt Drudge or some of these right-wing pundit sites can get away with the most scathing types of gossip and whatnot, and then just pull it back and say, oh, wait a minute, my sources weren't clear on that, but the story's already out, and it's already got to the few wires. I don't know if you've seen that, but Drudge has done that multiple times.
Yeah, I don't go there a lot, David, because it makes me need to feel like I need to take a shower. But
no.
But well, that point is driven home rather artfully in Good Night and Good Luck. Have you seen that yet?
Yes, I have.
You know that scene where they explain to Edward R. Murrow about how Alcoa writes the check?
Right.
This is that. So the people who depend on the government for their monies, well, you know, NBC, for God's sakes, is owned by General Electric. General Electric has done more to kill more brown people in Iraq than any other company in the United States, short of maybe Halliburton.
Hmm.
So necessarily, NBC wasn't going to be at the front of the curve. That's, you know, that explains Brian Williams sitting there throwing softballs to Bill Peter.
Well, at least we have some real truth tellers like Neil Young, who's, I don't know if you heard this, he's putting up his album Friday on the web.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Living with War. It's going to be able to be streamed for everybody.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, we'll start using it for bumper music. No doubt about that.
And before I go, I wanted to mention that Merle Haggard has a new song called Rebuild America First.
I had read about that. I hadn't heard it yet. I'm sort of in a technological no man's land down here.
And one last note that I want to give to you in Maine is that on my way outside of my apartment today, I saw a Purple Heart license on the license and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
And on the back it said, it was painted on. It said BUSH. But it's spelled out bullsh. I think there's no way that any amount of disinformation can stop this when you see something like that.
Well, no, I think the American people are waking up. The thing that keeps scaring me in the middle of the night, David, is the fact that this man, despite some of our more horrific fears, this man is not going to run for president again. This man can't be president again. And his entire second term can be the abject failure that apparently is. The question is, what comes next? And that's what makes the 2006 congressional election so important, and what made 2008 so important, because he had made an absolute train wreck out of the American economy, the opinion of America in the world, out of the American. He's broken. He's absolutely shattered. I mean, this thing is in pieces on the floor of the American military.
I don't think we're going to be able to know the ramifications fully until, like, a few years from now. This is going to bubble like we wouldn't believe.
Well, you're right, David, because economically, most of the junk that Bush has crammed down Congress's throat, and they in turn have crammed down ours, has to do with things that are going to happen in 2012. I mean, that's when the chickens come home to roost. This was all designed to give breaks to Bush's pal in real time, and yet for the bill not to be dropped on the table until two presidents down the road.
You know what's hysterical? If you go on some message boards sometimes that have a political theme, you'll get those people who are like these armchair military strategists,
uh-huh.
And they'll say, oh, I have battle maps, and then they'll just start talking about strategy like they know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that to a certain extent. And I've sat around and looked at the official government battle maps of Shiloh and things like that. And I do extrapolate to what's coming now. But
I mean, they'll be talking insane things like, well, all we need to do is nuke them with this kind of bomb and this kind of fighter jet. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
Well, then that's what scares me. You know, when people like Joe Lieberman, who came out last week and said he would be in support of an attack in Iran,
right?
And he didn't qualify that. He didn't say he would be in favor of a conventional attack on Iran. He just said an attack on Iran. So that means, by definition, he's down with Putin too. Now that is a wake up call to America. Pure and simple.
Did you see Greece rioted today?
No.
Yeah, they showed this huge war protest and whatnot, and the riot police came out, and it was on CNN for a little bit.
We were at, well, the time to take it on some other things while I'm down here, so
I understand.
Dave, good to talk to you. I'm sorry about the sound quality.
Oh, it's no problem. I mean, I'm used to this. I've been in a few Yahoo chats before.
I'd like this to be a little better than all that Yahoo chat, but I'm sure you can understand.
If you've been on the 28K modem, you're used to this. It's the ghetto version of it.
We're still going to try. David, thanks so much.
All right, Bob. Have a nice night.
Take care.
Later. Bye.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, more of your phone calls to 877, the number 4, head off 877-443-2366. And I'm going to see if I can stop sounding like the bastard some Matt Bedroom or Tron or some Cylon from Battlestar Galactica. Very funny, Agnes. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady?
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
In the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air.
And it was good. Once,
Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night, when everything's a little clearer in the light of day, and we know the night.
Aw, shucks, honey. Thanks, dear. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm here in one way or another, as far as I can tell. You know, that song, you know, I'm back in the old stomping grounds. I'm back where I grew up. And I can't hear that song about the Starland Vocal Band, you know, without thinking there was a promotion on the local radio station. I was maybe 12. And my best friend won an official pair of Starland Vocal Band sunglasses. You know, see, this is why the human brain is the most amazing computer of all. Where would that be on your hard drive, and how would you randomly access something like that? There are days I can't remember my social security number, but Buddy David won a pair of Starland Vocal Band official fan sunglasses. It's right there every time I hear that song. That, man. What does Miranda say in The Tempest? What a piece of work man is. And all the good sort of things, yeah. What a wonderful piece of work we are. Is that evil crap that we're capable of that really, really gives us not such a reputation with the, you know, red light. Let's go back to the phones. Andrew's with us, I hope, still, I think. Are you there, Andrew?
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Can't complain. Just wanted to touch on that strategic oil reserve topic you were talking about earlier.
Please.
Bush said, you know, releasing the oil from that or whatever, stop putting into it, whatever. It's like it's been filled since August of 2005. I know we had the Katrina debacle, you know, where they had to tap into it. But, I mean, it's like what's been going on with it since, you know? Seems like that oil's already been on the market.
Well, that's what I can't figure out in my own little time in mind is... And this is what I said earlier. If it wouldn't lower prices to release it from the strategic, then...
Around, like, at least 2 months ago, when it was cold.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a fraud, right?
Basically.
This is a con.
That's a con. So the only thing that's really being cut is the environmental protection and the taxes, which will go to the federal government anyway. So that's like, those taxes are almost like we should be paying ourselves. When we put a tax, it goes to investment or research or what have you, which we know it doesn't do that. But, you know, in the real world, it would.
So, did you see
I'm here, I guess. Sounds breaking up.
Oh, sorry about that. Oh. Did you see speech today at all?
Did I see you? Can you repeat that?
Yeah, sure. No, I was just wondering if you saw George's speech today.
Oh, yeah. So I heard it. I didn't see it. I was at work. I didn't see it.
Yeah, well,
I heard some. I heard bits and pieces of it.
Yeah, trust me, seeing it worse. But you know, he went on and he talked about how. We need to encourage people to buy biodiesel burning vehicles and
lip service.
It was all just a carnival sideshow.
Yeah, that was just lip service. That's all it was. I mean, they could have had this stuff. They could have been reducing prices back in February. Probably sure. Sooner earlier than that. I mean, the oil reserves are full. 700 million barrels. And
well, see, that's
a capacity of 727, roughly. But they don't need to fill it up to 727 because that's just expanded. So it's a scam. They're not giving up nothing.
No, and nobody's not going to be rich if the federal government just steps in and does something. Well, you know, the price controls don't work.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Oh, it sounds very well. Keep going. I'm losing the signal.
Sorry about that.
All right, then, Bob. Well, I'm going to take off.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Right. Appreciate your time. We're going to have this worked out sooner or later.
All righty. Have a good night.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, that was – I'm not going to try to play the audio because that may be part of what made things go south. But that was one of the things he said today. The quote was in Niedra Pickler's AP story, the stenographer. Presidents and Democrats in the past have urged higher taxes on fuel and price caps to control fuel expenses, but he said neither approach works. Instead, he called for increased conservation and expansion of domestic production and increased use of alternative fuels like ethanol. Well, let's see. Increased alternative fuels, that's going to please his ADM and his Cargill and his Monsanto buddies. And expansion of domestic production. Read Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Even he understands that the fraud isn't working that well anymore because he mentioned drilling Anwar. He said, and I realize this ain't going to do nothing for us in the short run. But it'll be good for us. There's not 6 months, there's not enough fuel in the Anwar to keep the United States cars running, let alone everything else we do with petroleum, for 6 months. And that increased conservation. Please. His policies, what did he say after 9/11? Everybody get on an airplane, go to Disney World, go to Florida. That's what we need you to do. Go shopping. Now it's the other way around, I guess. Good Lord God. So I assume that we have a... Yeah, I know we do.
We have a break.
Joe report?
Yes, we do. And we have a break coming.
And, well, yes, that's what I was getting ready to do.
And we'll be right back.
Okay. I promise.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. An article in this week's Atlanta Creative Loafing discusses the plight of MARTA, Atlanta's public transportation system, which has been on the verge of bankruptcy for many years. And at $1.75 per ride, MARTA is among the most expensive in the country, and the fare is due to go up soon. Why is that? Part of the reason is ideology. MARTA gets no funding from the state, and a fare that's unique in the country, until it can prove it can show a profit, which is ridiculous. The benefits of public transportation can't be seen on an accounting sheet. But the real reason is purely racist. MARTA is known by Atlanta suburbanites as moving Africans rapidly through Atlanta. And this attitude, veiled through code words, is screamed twice daily at Atlanta drivers on AM radio as they sit in bumper-to-bumper traffic on America's longest commute. And these drivers, many of whom live in counties that refused to have anything to do with MARTA at its beginnings, continue to vote for politicians and policies that'll keep them sitting in their cars longer and longer, no matter how much they widen the roads. And with gas approaching $3 a gallon, that commute is getting more and more expensive. Despite this, I don't expect Atlanta suburbanites to change their attitude anytime soon. The new trend is to move the suburbs closer to downtown, creating expensive residential areas for those who earn upwards of $50,000 a year. The other option, no doubt, is to create a new public transportation system, which can be called NNT. I think you can guess what that means. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
That old joke about what MARTA actually stood for that Joe says they're now repeating on right-wing radio every day was a joke you wouldn't tell in white company. And now it's 50 airwaves on a daily basis. Did I understand Joe correctly on that? Oh, yeah, we're getting great strides in race relations in the Deep South. Jiminy. And all over the country, for that matter. What was it? Friday night, I had a story of the Colorado legislator who received an email threatening to lynch him. Because he said they needed a wall around Colorado to keep the weird racists out. Then again, you know, there are parts of the country that some people think I have walls built around it to keep weird racists in and away from polite society. Let's our buddy Chris is with us from right here where I am in Alabama.
Hey,
where you going?
Hey, hey.
How you doing?
When they first asked President Bush to pick a cabinet, he chose royal blue.
Not colonial oak?
No. If you saw the photo of Vice President Dick Cheney asleep at the meeting with the Chinese president, he was not actually asleep. He was saying his mantra given to him by the rapidly declining mind of former NRA President Charlton Heston. Cheney repeated often, "Don't shoot the Chinaman in the face. Don't shoot the Chinaman in the face.
Don't shoot the Chinaman in the face." Oh, God.
Okay, this is one I like here. The president was feeling down the other day, so Chief of Staff Josh Bolton decided to look up some old drinking buddies that the president to hang out with to cheer him up. He placed a call to the National Guard barracks in Alabama, and the Secret Service rushed into the room and wrestled the phone to the floor. The next day, Bolton tried calling the embassy in Saudi Arabia, and the voice of Bandar Bush came on the phone cursing about the elections in New Orleans, and the Secret Service wrestled Bolton to the floor. The next day, Bolton was really getting worried about the president. He placed the last call he was going to try. He decided to call up some of those who had seen the president do cocaine while on the campaign trail during his years as governor and the White House. The operator came on the line and said the call could not go through his dial. When Bolton inquired as to why, the operator replied, "Mr. Bolton, we can't dig people up just to get them to the phone."
Hello, your mic.
Hey, a little Southern wisdom there. Why not?
Yeah, sure. But, oh, God. What you said about Bolton, I mean, if he wasn't just such a pure self-made SOB, I feel sorry for him right now. Because, you know, what has happened with where Josh Bolton is right now is essentially having had the captain of the Titanic go, "You steer."
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Don't shoot the Chinaman in the face. I loved. I mean that.
You didn't see behind Cheney. I saw photographs, but you couldn't see full behind him. What it was is he has to do that when they play him into the wall. He has to, you know how your computer will go into hibernate mode or sleep mode or something. That's what happens when you play Gene the wall.
Yeah, I love that picture.
His sleeve
of his coat. Like, come here, boy. Hey, come here.
Yeah.
I guess you've been told already you're having some audio problems.
Yeah, I'm being told is that this has to do with my cable connection.
Okay.
That it's not nearly as stable as a DSL from the phone company.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because if you watch the TV around here, the cable company has this Starlink commercial with a pair of animated turtles, the Slooskies. It's like, well, we don't like Comcast cable internet because it's far too fast for us. We much prefer the slower DSL.
Well, the one I've got here is through Comcast cable. It works pretty good. But
well, that's the thing. It works pretty well for me, Chris, except when I try to do this show.
Yeah, well.
Which leads me to think that it's probably me, and I don't know. I don't know.
It's like Jethro says, it's madness.
It is madness. Pure madness.
Well, take care, Hoff.
I'm going to. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. I'm here.
All right. Bye now. Okay, and I know this sounds awful. I'm so sorry. See, I'd go with before a fall. I've been very proud of the quality of our audio from our incredibly high-tech studios there in the wild, wonderful West Virginia. And I don't know what's wrong here, and I apologize. I'm the one who should be apologizing. This is my doing. I paid your forgiveness. After this, I'm going to watch Tron. Or I know, War Games. There's the voice. Let's go to line two and Ben. Hey, Ben, you're on. Let's see if we can talk.
Hey there, Bob.
How you doing?
Well, just fine. I thought I'd explain to people a little bit about why we're having trouble here.
Oh, please do.
Since it's ultimately my responsibility to see to it these things work. Cable modems are a shared resource. You get your downstream and your upstream on cable modems out of sort of a pool of bandwidth that exists on the cable branch you're on. So every cable branch has got what's called a head-end system, and that's a place where the data is parceled out into the coaxial cable that runs through the neighborhood. And from the head-end cable to you, there is a specific amount of bandwidth. Now, if no one else is using cable, if no one else is using the cable modem, you get amazingly wonderful bandwidth. And in fact, you know, years ago when cable modem was very new and people were, being the first cable modem users, they would tell their friends, oh my God, it's lightning fast, it's beautiful, it's wonderful. The problem is that when their friends actually listened and all got cable modem themselves, that wonderful experience disappeared. And the reason it disappeared is because, you were sharing that cable modem branch now with lots and lots of people. Now, the time of day at which a cable modem system is going to be busiest is between the time people get off work about 5 o'clock and about 10 at night. Now, unfortunately for us, you being on cable modem, that's the exact hours of your show.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're seeing here. It isn't that the data isn't actually getting through. It's that when data leaves your PC and heads towards the next Skype relay in the chain, it has to wait its turn for other cable modem data that other people are sending. So your neighbor who is busy sending a 400 megabyte copy of sorority stewardesses to his friend in Poughkeepsie is actually hogging the entire upstream bandwidth most of the time, and you have to wait until the next big chunk of that data is actually sent across before your audio data goes through. So what happens is you start talking, and some of your audio data is, you know, queued up for sending, and it goes off to the cable modem, thump, 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 in a very regular fashion, like a heartbeat. Unfortunately, at the cable modem, it gets clumped up, kind of like a heart that's got, you know, arterial sclerosis and some plaque. And so, you know, the data then goes through blah, 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 in bursts. And when it gets to the other end, only some of that data is actually there in time. The data that's there on time is what's used to make the signal everybody hears, and the rest of the data just gets lost. Now, the compression algorithms that Skype uses have got some ability to bridge the gap between lost or late data and whatever the next piece of current data is, and so that's why people can hear you at all. But I think the issue here is, in fact, the fact that cable modems suck. And I say this as somebody who used to design them.
Well, I think I followed fairly closely. You know, we're spending every available minute, every available hour outside the show trying to make this go. And I mean, the neighborhood where I am, I can tell you in all sincerity, I would guarantee there is not another cable internet connection within 200 feet of me.
Oh, the thing is they parcel out the cable modem head ends based on, you know, if in fact that's the case where there are very few cable modem users, then there'll be one for an extremely wide area.
Right.
Because they try very hard to put as few of those things in as possible. So, yeah, your immediate neighbors aren't doing it, but the fact that the guy 12 miles away is doing it may be enough.
No, that's entirely possible. Abby's wanting to jump in something there.
Yes, I wanted to jump in for just a second. You know, it's not the quality that we have at Head-On Communications. It's the quality that's being sent to us.
Oh, right. This is my fault.
Right, right. Well, no, it's not your fault. It's the cable company that you're dealing with right now told you that they were going to give you a certain bandwidth and you don't have that.
Oh, no doubt about that. They said that 6.0 down and 768 up, and I've speed tested and I get the 6.0 down, but I get 337.
Well, the thing of it is that it's the quality that's coming to us, and we're going to change that. We're not going to leave it this way because it's important for us to produce a clear and concise show. And we are so sorry that this is happening, and we're trying to remedy it as soon as we can. And Ben, you're awesome.
Well, I play awesome sometimes on television, but
you are.
Anyway, so that's the issue, folks. I just wanted to let everyone out there in the audience know that we're aware of the issue, we know what the problem is most likely, and we're working on it, and the solution is going to have to be, I believe, the installation of a different sort of broadband connection. Okay, you take care, Bob.
All right, thanks, Ben. I do appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Well, I tell you what we're going to do, because I see no way around this. I'm not very big on doing low-quality stuff, and frankly, for all... See, that's the thing. I can't hear either. And if I sound like Tron, I don't know. Who knows? Well, what I think we're going to do is, barring, we can't hear you.
Okay, I heard that, dear. We're going to go to a break.
We're going to go to a break, and we're going to knock off.
Okay, we're going to go to a break, and just hold on there.
Okay, take a break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kane. supposedly more or less of a primary mode right now, aiming toward the 06 midterms.
Mm-hmm. And there may be some good news. We don't know.
My problem, I got no progressives to vote for.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm not talking third-party stuff. I'm talking about returning the Democratic Party to its roots, to the fundamentals that FDR was talking about. You know, when he put forward his four freedoms, lo and behold, I read those the other day, and guess what? They're still relevant.
They're very relevant, and we wish we had them.
And as a consequence of that, the movements you're talking about, absolutely. And if we can get somebody to run for county commission out of that, if we can, somebody out
That's
there
right.
who can muster up the gumption to get up and go door to door and run for Congress, good for them.
Yep. Yep. And meanwhile, let's hold their feet to the fire.
Sure. And well,
organize people to just not let them get away with it.
Well, one last question with regard to an attempt to change the dialogue. Do you have any thoughts or do you have any suggestion for what we do when they bring it to us? Because again, the Kerry, I'm in West Virginia.
Uh huh.
And two states in the union in the 2004 election cycle received a flyer from the Republican National Committee. And if I'm not mistaken, it showed John Kerry putting a knife through a Bible.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
And it said, John Kerry is going to come and get your Bible. And that was West Virginia and Arkansas.
Wow.
Now, when they...
Very stark.
Do you... Yeah. It was horrifying. I mean, I they stood behind it. Yeah, they were proud of what they did, just like they were proud of the Swift Boat people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they bring that kind of stuff, do we, in my mind, you gotta fight that back. You can't just let that roll off your back like water off a duck's back.
Well, if you have all, it's going to be a lot easier to fight that if you've already got prominent religious people involved in your movements, in your party, and if it's going to be harder to pull that off, if it's clearly a welcoming place for Christians, for other religions, as well as for non-religious people, and I've noticed a real resurgence of anti-religious belittling, not just disagreement, because of course we disagree. Atheists disagree with religious people. People of different religions have different doctrines. There's nothing wrong with respectfully disagreeing, but there's been a wave of belittling and mocking and equating religious faith with stupidity among very reputable leftists.
Well, I think I'm probably guilty of some of that, Betsy.
Yeah, you've got to cut it out. You got to cut it out, because the truth is there are wonderful progressive religious activists. Watching Jim Wallace rally the progressive evangelicals, and I heard some of his book tour interviews and speeches, and it's a treasure.
Yeah, and
our
and those are
we have Christians who are looking to their Bible and saying, I need to get rid of poverty. That's what God wants me to do. And some of the most noble, I'm not a Christian myself, but some of the most noble activists I've ever seen, and the people who do the really tough, community organizing,
yeah, the gritty stuff,
service work, they're doing it straight out of their Christian religious faith.
I agree. And I guess where my guilt arises, and this isn't some sort of mea culpa, I differentiate, frankly. I differentiate between the people you just described and what I call the religion industry.
Uh-huh.
Because... I can't equate, and I have to draw a challenge, I think, between someone like, say, James Dobson, who writes books that says that children should be beaten until they cry real tears and writes it in the name of Christ Jesus.
Uh-huh.
I can't, maybe belittling is the wrong word. But I think as we seek this common ground, Jim Wallace is doing brilliant work when he talks about what a moral document the Gospels are and how every tenth verse that Jesus speaks is about how we treat the poor and the downtrodden.
That's right.
There are people on the other side, Betsy, who say that
I mean, they just ignore it, and they run to Leviticus, and they're more concerned with, that litany of a man shall not lie down with a man, and nor shall he eat boiled shrimp. I'm glad I got a laugh out of you. Because I feel bad about that sometimes, but it's a total misunderstanding. There's a brilliant book out there right now called Misquoting Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That I think should be probably a primer, but I hope as we seek the means by which, because we got whipped on religion in 2004.
Yep. And I think we need to watch our tone, because there are some very dangerous fundamentalist theocrats doing manipulative things in our country, who we should vehemently oppose in everything they're trying to do. But if we allow our way of talking to them to become shrill, to become hateful, to become contemptuous and belittling, who is going to take that tone as towards themselves is not them. They don't pay any attention to us, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's going to be the rank and file Christian person who could interpret their faith in a number of different ways. And they hear our tone, and they think, these people hate us. They hate religious people. They hate Christianity. They hate me. You know, these people are snobs and anti-religious elitists. And it loses. There's potentially liberal people who are lost.
Well, sometimes I think that is a very good point. It's something I'm going to have to chew on a little bit, Betsy, because in some ways I think the Dobsons and the Falwells and the Robertsons, they're not there to train or lead their flock. Their flock are already mesmerized. They've had the Kool-Aid, whatever.
Yeah.
And they are there to draw us out so that they can have a perpetual enemy.
Right. Right, and we keep playing into the role. That's the point. That's what I was writing about in Inequality Matters and also in my book, In Class Matters. We keep playing into that role. They need us to act like, very highly educated, anti-religious, condescending...
Secular humanist,
but just coastal elite.
Yeah.
They need us to play that role.
They need us to be their bête noire.
Yeah. Well, we need to
stop
playing in that role. We don't have to play that part. You can talk to someone you disagree with about religion or about social issues with respect. And why is that such a hard lesson for us to learn? It might be the thing that is the difference between winning an election and losing an election.
I think it may be, and I think it's hard to learn, Betsy, because we on our side see ourselves as very much a live and let live group, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence of that, when somebody comes at us with a pamphlet that's got a knife through a Bible and tells us that's what we stand for, no amount of kumbaya singing is gonna make us not want to fight that, because
it's an abject lie. I'm looking at a different source. I think you're onto something there. But the book I wrote called Class Matters is about the subtitle is Cross Class Class Activists.
Okay.
I think that a lot of liberals, not all, because we're a mixed class,
right,
political tendency, but there's lots of us that grew up with college-educated, homeowning parents, expected to go to college, rewarded in the tracking system of the schools, being told we're smart, you know, and we're special, and expecting to go into professions, and expecting working-class people to serve us. That was the training we got. We got really, really classist training.
Forgive me, but I was born and raised in Alabama, and that's just amazing for me to hear. I'm as liberal as the day is long, and I guess there were people like that out there. I've never known them.
You've never known them?
No.
Okay, so your experience is different, but if you look at who is populating the think tanks, the media outlets, the Democratic Party, It's a lot of people who that's their life story.
Well, when John,
and that's why their politics are so off. Their tone is so off. They step on people's toes and seem condescending because they were trained to be that way, and we gotta unlearn that.
Gosh, I hope I can help because you know I come from the beans and cornbread crowd.
Okay, good.
And I mean,
probably you have some better ways of talking to regular people.
But you're absolutely right, Betsy, because you know when the 2004 election comes down to a choice between one Skull and Bonesman and another Skull and Bonesman,
exactly.
There's a bunch of us out here that said, "Yeah, I don't got the handshake."
Right, right, right. We got. I mean, the concept of choosing a candidate that regular people can relate to. Working class people are the majority of the country.
Yeah.
Working class white people are the plurality of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose somebody who just is bound, is so, so likely to rub people in that demographic group the wrong way.
Well, yeah.
Like John Kerry, you know, we believed it. When Maureen Dowd said that John Kerry said, "Who among us does not love NASCAR?" He didn't actually say it. It was apocryphal. But we all believed it because it sounded just like him. He's trying to be, like, down with the regular working class people, and, you know, there he is.
Yeah, and, oh, well, and exploiting Howard Dean when he said,
right.
Well, my favorite book of the New Testament is Job. Now, anybody who ever spent his time in the basement of the Baptist church with the little blue-haired ladies like I do know that Job's in the Old Testament.
Right.
And that thing got beaten across this country like a little tin drum. And I think you're really onto something, Betsy, with this, because look at the last two Democrat presidents elected, and look at the commonality that they have. You got Bill Clinton, and I know there's a lot of progressives that, oh yeah, best Republican president we ever had. Now I understand some of that, but you got Bill Clinton and you got Jimmy Carter,
right?
And they spoke
right.
to the ordinary. And when we send, and I'm not saying it has to be a Southerner. I was very much taken with Dennis Kucinich, because when that guy looks at you and tells you, "I know what it's like to live in a freaking car,"
you believe him.
Yeah, you know that he's coming right from that vinyl that vinyl seat cover.
Right, right, right. I think people are open to voting for somebody that they disagree with on certain things. If they, you know, look them in the eye and talk like a down-to-earth person and feel like it's someone who can understand the kinds of problems that us ordinary people have.
Yeah. And
so I don't know why that's, like, hard to figure out.
Well,
I feel very frustrated with the National Democrats, as you can tell.
Yeah, well, I am too. And, I mean, the strategists and the pollsters and the people who tell you how it's got to be and you got to do it this way and you can't be a Democrat. There's as long a list of what you can't do if you're a Democrat as anything that you can.
Right.
And
yeah.
You know, I had a bad feeling when we nominated Senator Kerry.
Yeah.
You're in Boston.
Oh yeah, no, I know.
You know,
up
east liberal, great guy, wonderful in the Senate. Stay there.
Well, not so great.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of a phoning it in kind of.
Well,
guy,
I know. Yeah, I know. He's a lunch buddy of the guy who owns the coal mine that blew up in West Virginia.
Right. Right.
And
no, he's done some good votes, but where are his actual loyalties? I think they're to himself, to his donors. I think to veterans and people missing in action, you know, relatives of people missing in action. I think that's sincere. I don't know if he's got any other sincere issues at all.
We've got to wrap it up, and I thank you for spending so much time with me. I really do.
My pleasure.
Do you see anybody on the horizon in 08 that you can feel good about in the Democratic Party in the presidential race?
Well, probably. I work for a nonprofit, United for a Fair Economy.
Right.
So, I can't endorse.
No, we're not endorsing.
Or parties, but I did know, you know, I did notice that bump up in the polls with John Edwards and the Two Americas. That was my most hopeful moment of the last race. I was kind of hoping he'd be nominated. I think.
Well, is there a way then that we get these? Okay, I'll use the language I grew up with. Is there a way we get these snobs
right
to listen to us?
I think build a movement, a cross-class, cross-race movement that's so strong that they can't ignore it. That's the only way. And that United for a Fair Economy, that's our mission, is supporting the growth of a cross-race, cross-class movement, choosing the issues of economic inequality as the preeminent crisis of our times and also the unity issue. That's the thing that unifies us. Many things divide us, but that's the thing that unifies us, is we're all horrified by the Enron people taking over and the Walmarts taking over. We're all horrified at how work doesn't pay anymore.
And UnitedForAFairEconomy.org, that is your website?
It's FairEconomy.org, yep.
FairEconomy.org.
FairEconomy.org.
Lots of resources there, I assume.
Yep, resources there. Also, inequality.org, Jim Lardner's website.
Right.
And my own website is classmatters.org.
And that's also a book which people can purchase.
That's right.
And help you out.
That's right.
All right. Betsy Leander Wright, thank you so very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure talking with you.
I hope we can have some more of this conversation at a later date. I really, really do think that we've got to think about this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'll look forward to that, Bob.
All right. Take care, Betsy.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Fascinating conversation. You hear the Rush Limbaughs of the world talking, limousine liberals. I guess there are some. And maybe I got the wrong fraternity handshake or something, but all the Democrats I've ever known were working people. And that's just the simple truth of it. Tell you what, let's take our top of the hour break, come back, take some of your phone calls. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
I'm Bruce Birch, and here are the headlines from the Head On Radio Network. With George Bush's poll numbers falling like spring rain, the Pentagon announced a new offensive in Iraq today. Operation Swarmer is the largest air offensive of Bush's three-year war against Iraq. More than 50 aircraft and 1,000 soldiers descended upon a rural area near Samarra in advance of the opening of Iraq's parliament. With the targets being residential, more civilian casualties are expected. The raid came amid plummeting American sentiments about the possibility of the U.S. winning the war. A new CNN USA Today Gallup poll shows Americans much more pessimistic about the outcome of George Bush's war. Fully 60% of those surveyed understand that things aren't going well in Iraq. 55% had the common sense to realize that Iraq is sliding towards civil war. Only 47% of Americans now approve of Bush's slaughter in Iraq on a moral basis. Amid growing American disillusionment with Bush's Iraq war, the White House is still forging ahead. The Bush administration released its National Security Strategy paper today. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley still claims that George Bush has the right to make war on any country of his choosing at any time. The most hair-raising part of the report is the portion that maintains George Bush may still start a war against Iran. And of course, another side effect of low Bush poll numbers is increased government terror warnings. The Cox Arena in San Diego was cleared today before NCAA tournament basketball games. Authorities reported their bomb-sniffing dogs discovered a suspicious package in the arena, causing the evacuation. The suspicious package turned out to be a package of condiments outside a hot dog stand. They're getting better at spotting suspicious hot dog stands, but the Department of Homeland Security still has a long way to go. That's the latest from a report detailing the department's failings in dealing with taxpayer dollars. The department's inspector general says that 20% of the money Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff handed out for port security had nothing to do with preventing a bomb from coming into one of America's many vulnerable ports. The White House is very excited about its new Homeland Security Center for faith-based initiatives. Iraqi resistance to the American occupation is apparently contagious. The top commander in Afghanistan says devices being used in that pathetic country show signs of influence from Iraqi bomb makers. General Benjamin Freakley said today that his command is still trying to figure out how the Afghanis got the Iraqi technology. This is news from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children has doubled, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children will use them. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
An American company has poisoned several British citizens. Paraxyl, a company from the U.S., administered human tests of a new drug that has critically poisoned several people in the U.K. The drug was designed to fight autoimmune disorders and leukemia. Instead, it has left at least two young people near death. The British government has halted the tests run for German drug maker Tegenero and sent warnings about the drug worldwide. The state of Illinois is suing a nuclear power company for putting poison in the water. The state served papers on Exelon today for spilling millions of gallons of water laced with tritium into Illinois waterways. Tritium is a poisonous radioactive element. It got into the water when Exelon had a series of accidents at its Braidwood plant that sent the poison water into the ground around the plant. Exelon says it broke no laws. Halliburton is admitting it nearly poisoned our troops. In a report released Thursday, the giant war profiteer confessed that it failed to assemble and use its own water purification equipment at an American military installation outside Ramadi in Iraq. Halliburton's report says that it pumped filthy, polluted water straight out of the Euphrates River into the camp. The Bush administration has no intention of doing a thing about the near disaster. Housing starts are down. Federal government data shows construction of new homes decreased by 7.9% from January. Although construction is still going up, home purchases have also begun to fall. Economists say that the housing market can't tolerate that kind of imbalance for long. In a report that's bound to drive religious fundamentalists to distraction, NASA scientists announced Thursday that they've looked back in time to an instant right after the Big Bang, 1/1,000,000,000 of a second after the Big Bang, to be precise. The scientists say that the U.S. space probe has seen the moment when the entire universe went from subatomic size to its present state in less than the blink of an eye. The probe examined light that has been traveling across the universe for over 13 billion years. I'm Bruce Birch, and that's the news from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
I got to get Agnes a pill or something. I very much enjoyed our conversation with Betsy Leander Wright, and I think her essay, if her book is as good as her essay is, she has a lot of valid commentary to make. And I hope you understand that what she was saying very sweetly is what we say every night at this program after but we sound like we've just gargled razor blades before we say it. I admire someone who can say, I'm very upset with the National Democrats. This woman, and I've emailed with her and with her spouse extensively, we're talking about people committed to everything we talk about being the right way to run America. Fair wages, a chance to go to the doctor when you're sick or when your kid's sick. Or the idea that being laid off from work doesn't mean that you're, you know, facing absolute economic ruin. True FDR democratic principles. But it blows my mind to think that there are people up there, out there, who've never met a beans and cornbread Democrat. Because we're out here. The question is finding the way to remind people that they are. All those Reagan Democrats, those mugwumps who crossed over to vote for Ronald Reagan and thereafter just, well, I'm a Republican, in Tennessee and South Carolina and Georgia and North Carolina and Florida and Alabama and Mississippi and Arkansas and some, those people were raised out of the damn dirt by FDR, and they remembered him for it. But the thing is, the people who remembered, I keep coming back to this, Republicans can only get away with their crap when the last generation that remembers that crap dies off. And that explains your southern so-called Reagan Democrats, because they didn't eat the damn mustard sandwiches that their parents and their grandparents ate. They didn't pour, you remember that wonderful scene from To Kill a Mockingbird, where Scout is appalled that her young luncheon guest is pouring sorghum molasses all over his biscuits. Well, Atticus, he's pouring it all over everything. He's ruining his meal. Young lady, you will eat in the kitchen until you can act like you can sit in civilized society. The crowd that poured the molasses on their biscuits ran, not walked. Baby, they ran to the polls to vote for FDR. And they're no different than Southern people now, except for the Southern people now that are voting for Republicans have been hoodooed. They've been to the medicine show, they had a big swig of the snake oil, and they're wandering around drunker than Adam's off ox, and they're voting Republican in the process. Maybe that's why I am the only born and bred Southern talk radio host. Maybe I'm one of the few people in America that comes from there that gets it. Let's go to the phones. Gene is with us from Oregon. Hey, Gene, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm a little off. I just came down from the hospital, so.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I'm an outpatient procedure, so if I'm a little off, just put it down to the drugs.
okay.
Your guess that you had.
Uh-huh.
I agree with what she says, but the thing that's so hard for me, to be honest, the thing about religion, and, you know, you can call religious people stupid, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but I find that it's hard for me to be very accepting of them. And the reason I'm that way is the way I grew up. I grew up in a lot of different churches. I was raised Mormon, but I had a lot of different church upbringings. Mormon and, believe it or not, kind of like Baptist, which is kind of a hard mix.
Yeah, that's...
yeah.
Man, Gene, I'm surprised you...
Well, here's the way it works. Mom's family was Methodist. Dad's side was Baptist. And when my parents were together, that kind of thing. When we were younger, Mom decided she wanted to try Mormonism because she thought it was a nice idea. Which I'm not a Mormon either now, so, well, at least not a, well, technically yes, but I don't really.
Yeah, you're kind of apostate. You're,
yeah, I, that's me. That's why I hang out with the Unitarians and feel good about myself.
Right.
But the point I was trying to bring up was this. I just feel so, I know that it probably comes across to people of faith that I would be one of these stuck up, you know, religion is garbage Democrats because that's the way I come off. But I think what it is I've had a lot of, you know, growing up in those different religions, and so I always never seem to conform. You know, I kind of feel like, well, fine, if you're not going to be satisfied with me, I don't want to even be around you.
Well, and I think, Gene, you're absolutely right, because what we're talking about here is, and I guess I conveyed it poorly, and I apologize for that. When people are coming at you with their religion like a baseball bat,
yeah,
I'm going to respond all kinds of ways.
Yeah,
one of them's going to be to get a baseball bat of my own.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I mean, I've had people here in Oregon that have come and said, "Can you pray for you, sir?" It's like, I rather than just lunge at them and just yell at them, I generally try to just blow them off because I had to put up with that a long time. But I'm sorry, I can't at this moment put my arm around the same folk and say, "Hey, look, you and I got a lot in common. Let's talk." Now, what I will go this far. I will say, I'll be willing to, if the person is like a United Church of Christ member,
yeah,
or a fairly liberal denomination, if they were a member of, say, any church that the evangelical would call dead, then I would feel more comfortable talking to that person. But my point, I think that it's the progressive evangelical's job to have to go out and go back to their other evangelicals and say, "Look, we don't believe the way you do. We believe in God, and we feel that you've hijacked our religion," which
yeah,
they have.
Yeah.
That's,
well, you know, I think what you're getting at, if I could be so bold as to,
sure,
almost try to take your idea a step further, and it really does jibe with a lot of what I'm thinking. There, you know, in addiction situations,
yeah,
there are people out there who have the guts to get out and do what they call an intervention. And for those people of faith on this side of the debate, we really, really, really want to do an intervention. For the otherwise decent people, it's not just the faith that's been hijacked, Gene. It's those people who have been hijacked, and they're getting their money stolen from them. They're getting their labor stolen from them.
Yeah.
They're getting their lives stolen from them, because at the end of the day, they're going to lay on that bed or whatever at the end of their 3 score and 10 and go, "Oh hell, I got robbed."
Yeah.
And I'd like for them not to do that.
Well, I'm going to throw out one other thing, and this is neither here nor there, but I was thinking today, because, you know, my mom and the rest of my family is all back in Michigan, and they're of that same evangelical kind of, and they're not fairly progressive, they're fairly right-wing Republicans. And I'd like to get to them and I, you know, sit down and say, "Look, I listen to my liberal talk shows and stuff, because to me, that's church." The point I'm bringing out about this is basically, evangelicals and conservatives say, "Oh, liberals don't go to church," that kind of thing. In a sense, we do, in the sense that we tune into this or Mike or we read whatever book. I mean, we kind of approach it in a similar way. We just have different sins, if you will.
Well, right, or, you know, I don't buy much into the concept of sin in the first place. But,
yeah, well, I know, but I'm
but,
like,
no, I understand what you're saying. And the thing is, you know, I joke about, you know, Brother Bob's Cathedral of Common Sense.
Yeah.
But some of that is, and I freely admit that that my background, my upbringing, informs the way I go about doing this show.
Yeah.
And some of that is, you know, we do reach out to each other. I'm so proud of what happens for 3 hours every night, Gene.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not me reaching out to other people. It's other people reaching out to me. And I'm touched by it, and I'm moved by it. And it's very much like a religious experience.
It is. And what I mean by different sins, what I mean is, like, where that side would get uptight over abortion rights, We get uptight over, like, a pollution controls and that kind of thing on an automobile.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean.
Okay.
By,
well, that, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And one last quick thing. I was going to tell you this last night. I went to therapy yesterday, actually, and that same conservative guy the guy that told me the Brazilian joke. we got to talking because while I was going to do my thing, I was reading Outdoor Life magazine or whatever that is, and wouldn't you know, they had an article on page 23 of the December-January issue for 2006, and this guy had managed to catch an 873-pound salmon, which broke a record, but it also broke another record in the fact that it had 2.5 times the level of mercury that's considered, you know, safe to eat. So it goes on in the article after this is, I think the big thing was, if it's 1.9%, or 1.9 parts per billion, which I think is supposed to be quote unquote acceptable, then you can only really eat about 4 ounces a month and stay in the limit. So we got to talking about that, and I thought, gee, that was interesting that you would find that in an Outdoor Life magazine.
Yeah, right, and you know, some of that's very valuable because the hunters and the fishermen have to understand that they would be better off on the side of the so-called tree huggers and the enviro Nazis than they would on the people who want to pave the places that they used to hunt.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and we got onto all kinds of other things. It's kind of weird because here he is, a physical therapist, and, you know, I kept saying, well, you know, because we were talking about OHSU, which is a big hospital up here, and he was mad about a bill he had to pay that was like $400 for a 20-minute consultation. And then it says, we ought to go for single-payer healthcare. I don't even bother to socialize medicine. And he comes back and goes, oh, but that's socialized medicine. And it's like, no, it's not. It's single payer healthcare. It's the same thing. And it's like, oh, no.
but one step forward and two steps back, Gene.
But the one thing he does kind of, it scares the crap out of him is the peak oil thing. So
yeah,
at least there's hope.
Well, you know, and you're carrying on that dialogue. You know, I don't know where it's going to go when you get to the point that, They all have some sort of tipping point. You can talk to them and talk to them. I experienced this dealing with conservative West Virginians over in Beckley. You can, yeah, I agree with you there. I agree with you there. I agree with you there. And then, but they've got that tipping. No, because see, John Kerry wants my guns.
Yeah. Yeah,
they've all got some tipping point that will keep them in the fold of the deliberately self-benighted. And I, greater minds than I, obviously, have pondered the whys and wherefores of it,
yeah.
And we can't come up with an answer. You know, if you make that connection, you have done something right nigh unto miraculous, Gene. And I'm not being a smart ass.
I doubt it because the entire office is rapidly. Well, I don't know if they're rapidly. The secretary is a lot worse than he is, but at least I can talk to him.
Well, Gene, so good talking to you. You have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
You too.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
And we are joined now by our good friend from WD40.com. That's D-U-B-Y-A-D-40.com.
Dookie the Webmaster. Hey, Dookie, how's it going? You're head on.
Hey, Bob, what's going on?
Nah, we're having more fun than most human beings deserve to have.
Oh, I don't think you're having more fun than I am right now.
No, probably not, because...
Yeah, we just left the bar, so that's...
Well, that's kind of where I was getting at.
I want to say hi to Agnes. We love Agnes. She's our girl.
And she loves you guys. I can't pull her away from your website now. She is a comment posting fiend.
You know, I've got the same problem at home because my wife can't pull me away from porn. So it's the same thing.
Oh, were you the guy that called Dell that called the Home Shopping Network the other night about the new Dell computer?
It was pretty classic. No, that wasn't me. That was my brother. No. I'll tell you what, if you stay up late at night and you watch the Home Shopping Network, it gets crazy. I've seen a guy light himself on fire on accident with a toaster. I'm serious. You get drunk or if there's any other paraphernalia that you do and you end up watching Home Shopping Network late at night, we're talking about 2 or 3 in the morning.
Better than Pink Floyd.
It's better than Pink Floyd. I mean, it is so funny. I mean, you wouldn't believe all the stuff I have here at the house. You know, I've got the Ronco Pocket Fisherman.
Oh, you got it? Yeah, how can you not have the Pocket Fisherman?
Yeah.
The Buttoneer? Do you have the Buttoneer, Dookie?
No, I don't have the Buttoneer.
Oh, darn the luck.
No, I couldn't find a credit card. But no, I have a lot of stuff from watching that late at night. Who knows? You know, sometimes I can't sleep. So.
Well, yeah. Well, I tell you that what we're talking about here, just so folks will know, I guess it was Clyde sent along the clip, a guy calling the Home Shopping Network, taught they were selling Dell computers.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you could probably Google this up. It's out there, isn't it?
I think it's on, if they go to YouTube, which is YOUTUBE.com.
Uh-huh.
And search for the Dell computer, I think they'll find it. So.
Yeah, I'm, you know, from now on, our outward should be porno. guy talking about how much he enjoys his new Dell computer and why he enjoys it so much at 2 o'clock in the morning calling from Delaware.
Oh, yeah. And there was only one reason why, and I think it hit him pretty good. So.
Oh, just the look on the woman's face is precious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was like, we got to go to commercial right now. So, yeah, you got to love humor, you know. So.
No, we got to laugh somewhere along the way. I mean, that's, you know, I was, it was half funny and half tragic just watching the whole hot dog of death scare out there in San Diego, California today. It just, because, you know, I'm a brackets guy. I'm a big dance guy. I follow the tournament.
And to
see an entire arena evacuated because a dog smelled an 8-week-old hot dog inside a hot dog stand.
Exactly.
You know, you can't pay for that stuff.
Well, look what happened there in New York. What was it, about 6 months ago? It's kind of the same thing type happened with the subway, with the some person had a backpack and they thought it was a bomb, and sure enough, it didn't happen, and even the governor decided to, or no, I'm sorry, the mayor of New York City decided to ride the subway the very next day. I mean, sometimes you think this stuff is planted, you know.
This
poll numbers go down, there's something that comes out.
Exactly.
You know?
This thing in San Diego was so Rovian, I'm surprised the dog wasn't, like, you know, short, fat, and bald, and had funny looking glasses.
And his nickname was Turd Blossom.
That's exactly. Anything wild and wonderful happening over at WD-40?
Oh, we got a lot of stuff going on. How do you like the new design?
I think that's gorgeous. It's a lot less static than what the old one was.
Oh yeah.
It's a little bit more fun to wander around, and the commentary is more prominently featured.
Oh yeah. Well, we spent a lot of time on it. We got a lot of our readers came up and asked us, you know, what can we do to make the site even more interactive than what we already had? And, well, we end up coming up with this. So we can offer main stuff, you know, main information that we want to get out there that's the most important that we feel at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, like action alerts and, hey, you know, this guy's going up against Joe Lieberman. You might want to help out his campaign.
Right.
And, you know, we still offer headlines and so on. So, we put a lot of time, a lot of effort into it, and we're getting a lot of good feedback.
Is the hit counter spinning pretty good?
I was telling Agnes before I came on that We average anywhere from about 850,000 hits to 1 million a day right now. So
jumping, Jehoshaphat.
Well, we've done pretty good. I mean, when we started out, you know, it got pretty bad, and we were on Howard Stern.
Yeah.
And Howard Stern's audience came over to us when they heard about it, and that's kind of how we started. So we got a lot of East Coast hits right now. So.
Well, that means we got to work the West Coast a little bit now.
Yeah, well, we get a lot of West Coast now because we've been featured on a lot of the liberal sites. We've been on, like Daily Kos and Democrat Underground and so on. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's where we're filling the gaps at. And especially the North, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, they hit us a lot. You know, even Florida, down south, Florida hits us a lot. So,
well, we're trying to get a few people out of the red states to hit you a little bit too.
Hey,
so.
we've been getting them too, and actually last night I logged on to the chat rooms the night before, and I got to speak with one of your listeners, Nanette. She's a nice girl. She sent us an email. So,
oh, Nanette's wonderful people.
If she's listening right now and on the chat room, I just want to say hi to her. She's a very lovely lady, and we're glad that she's a new reader now. I know she, I guess, for the longest time was trying to figure out exactly what was the name of our website, and if it wasn't for Agnes to spell it out on a chat room, she would have never known about us. So.
Yeah, see, I just take it for granted, Doogie.
I'm
so used to it that, you know, and I've sent a lot of people over to the aerosol lubricant website.
Yeah, well, for the longest time, we always had a disclaimer down at the bottom of the website that said, in no way are we affiliated with the WD-40 product, but we do recommend the lubricant because I use it all the time. So
it's delicious on sweet taters.
Oh, I tell you what, and that late night where you're home alone and you got nothing to do, and looks at you as the dog, you know. I mean, why not, you know?
Exactly.
You can lock the door on the bathroom. Who knows?
and when it gets stuck, you can unlock it with the WD-40.
Exactly. If you can turn the knob because your hand's so greasy.
Oh, God. You're going to get me in trouble. You understand that, don't you?
I'm trying to be as clean as possible. Oh, no. This is like this is actually pretty mild for our bar nights.
One of these days I want to be there for the bar night.
I hope you guys are. It's pretty fun. Actually, the place that we are at, here in town, the bar really enjoys us. The entire staff comes up and hugs us and says hi, and even all the other customers, they know who we are. They know what we do, and believe it or not, in the reddest of red states of Kansas, they don't like Bush no more. So it's really nice to be in that environment now, where we can talk and everyone's all in agreement. Because 6-7 years ago, it was the exact opposite. I mean, they were just blood red. So.
Oh yeah, carrying little pictures of George Bush up on the cross or something.
Oh yeah, they had a thing for Clinton just because he had consensual sex with another woman, and they just didn't think it was right. Well, now they realize that there's no jobs, and gas prices out here right now. I drove by the gas station; they're sitting at $2.49 a gallon just for unleaded. Out here. So,
yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks, George.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're running big combines.
Yeah, I was going to say, it takes a bunch of diesel or even gasoline for the gas powered ones, because diesel's through the freaking roof too.
Yeah, and every time a farmer fills up, I know he only uses the combine about twice a year. These are $150,000 machines out here, so. But still, that takes a lot of money when you're doing 150 acres, 250 acres at a time.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's profit. Yeah, definitely. So they're feeling the impact. I mean, there's a lot of unemployed, just like anywhere, in the U.S.
I saw a story today, Dookie, that you're talking about the positive end of things. I saw a story today coming out of Kansas, about the new opt-in system for sex education out there. Did you catch that thing?
Yeah, we caught it. Yeah, we caught it. We were one of the first that even saw it. So, I kind of got mixed feelings on that, and maybe that's just me, but, maybe it's the same as, the religion in school. I mean, I think parents have a lot to do with the way their children are raised now.
Sure.
If I had a child that went to a school that wanted to, pray all day and learn more about the Bible than they do science, I'd rather give my consent on what the child would learn, because I do feel that, parents are a great deal responsible for their children and how they learn, how they grow up, you know. And, you know, I guess out here we all kind of got the same feeling that it's one thing to be forced to learn a subject or letting your parents learn. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of fundies out here. They're all signing up right now.
Well, the thing is that they've turned it on its head, Dookie. It used to be that if you wanted your kid not to have sex education, you had to opt them out.
Yeah.
But now you have to act. They've made it almost impossible to offer the class because you have to affirmatively opt them into it. And, you know, you don't want anybody to see you signing the dirty paper for your kids.
Well, you wouldn't believe it out here. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people out here that do sign that letter.
Well, I hope they do, because, you know, like I've said a couple of times, we got shop class so that kids won't lop an arm or a hand off the first time they pick up the circular saw.
Well, yeah, that is true.
We got driver's ed class so that they won't take out the phone pole the first time they get behind the wheel. But we got a problem having given a kid a sex class so they won't catch a disease and die the first time they do it.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, same goes for anything. But, you know, right now we live in a generation where these kids know about that stuff, you know, at 10 years old. I mean, I was lucky to even know what, you know, the female parts of the male parts really looked like and what they did until I was really a teenager, you know.
Yeah, I thought those Swedes were selling dirty automobiles, Volvos, for God's sakes. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, I didn't, you know, if it wasn't for my dad's porno stash under his bed, I would have never known a lot of this stuff.
Thank God for dads.
Oh, Dad ruled, you know. And when he passed on, Mom made sure to give me those magazines, because I still use them to this day.
Well, bless her heart, you know, and you know, then there's you know, kids, nephews, you know.
Well, you gotta love the 80s chicks.
Oh man, yeah. the big hair, sure.
Well, the big hair, well, I don't know what hair are you talking about.
Did you stop that?
Okay, I'll stop that.
Hey, Dookie, thanks so much, brother.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm gonna join you guys in the chat room a little later if you log on.
All right, sounds like a lot of fun. Take care now.
Bye.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Our great good friend, Dookie from WD40.com. That's D-U-B-Y-A, excuse me, D-U-B-Y-A-D-40.com. WD40.com, the best information source on the Internet, period, bar none. You want to know what's going on, you go to WD40.com. You'll know what's going on. And you'll also receive the wit and wisdom of Dookie and Clyde, and Inside Ed's Head, and Schuster's Shtick, and even my lovely wife Agnes chiming in now. And Wally. Yeah, I can't leave Wally out. I wouldn't leave Wally in, leaving Wally out. Everybody's a critic. Let's keep it rolling. Let's go back to the phones. Peter's with us from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Hey, Bob. I got a laugh out of the big hair comment. You ever spend any time watching the Big Hair Channel?
You know, we haven't gotten it here in the Hills and Hollers yet.
Well, you'll get it one day.
I'm afraid we will.
I wanted to talk about Betty. I remember it's something dash Wright. I forgot the.
Betsy Leander Wright.
That's it. Yes, Betsy Leander Wright. Some of her thoughts, and I've got to tell you, it's all well and good to have studied communications and realize the social baggage that goes along with various words and, that we use, but clearly, Bob, I believe that she's out of her area of experience, and by that, I'm talking about personal experience. Now, you know, I myself live and had lived and have walked with the people that she's talking about addressing, the blue-collar people,
uh-huh,
all my life. I mean, I like you, I grew up poor in the South. I mean, I live in a dirt road in an old beat-up house, the house I grew up in. She indicated that she said quite clearly, I'm not a Christian. Well, you know, not that that means anything in terms of any political meaning, but, you know, I'm in church every Sunday, and you know, I remember I told you I was in, had problems with drugs for a long time, and
yeah.
You know, I spent a whole year in a faith-based drug rehab. I mean, you know, I was there 24 hours a day. It was an in-house facility. I've been actually locked up with the Assembly of God for an entire year. I know these people. And
I do too. I wasn't locked up with them involuntarily or anything, but I spent a significant portion of my life with them.
Well, sure you have. Sure you have. And she made one point that I had to applaud her on. It was a good point. And that point was that we needed to be careful how we addressed, how we talked about Christians. You know, when we, there's, regardless of what you have to tell them, if you bash Christianity or if you say, you know, those Christians, that's something, they will shut down immediately and not listen to you.
Well, there's truth in that.
Yes, but and you do it the correct way. You always qualify the fake Christians or how do you put it, the corporate Christians,
the religion industry.
Religion industry. We always differentiate people of faith versus the religion industry, and you know. These people, as long as you're not bashing Christianity, there's no problem with using, you know, the hallmark of any advanced civilization is an agreed upon vocabulary. And it's not always necessary or even practical to use high English. Clearly, many blue collar people are far more comfortable with everyday language. The word idiot, incompetent, liar, those are words that people get. Now, the only reason they would have a problem hearing those words is simply pride and not wanting to hear, I told you so.
Yeah, darn fool.
Right, exactly, exactly. While the woman was well-researched, I don't think that she fully understood the depth, how we necessarily work.
Peter, part of that is a 150-year-old problem. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Well, no. Go ahead.
There is a disconnect in this country that has existed since sometime around the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, part of that disconnect is the disconnect between the whites and their subject persons, the African Americans, Indians, what have you. Another part of that disconnect is a disconnect between what was by then already a mechanizing North and an agrarian South.
I see. Yeah. I see that.
Nobody was more hated in the antebellum South than a elitist abolitionist Yankee.
Well, this is true. The whole carpetbagger thing went down.
Yeah. Right. And it's always a matter of people coming down South. Well, you know, you people don't understand how you need to be doing things because you're a bunch of dumb damn hillbillies.
Well, that's so common. It happens so often when people come down, having lived in the North, they often expect that they're going to sit down and tell you how we do it up there.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, we get
damn how they do it.
Right. I mean, you live in the South. You probably know the joke. There's three kinds of Yankees. There's Yankees, damn Yankees, and goddamn Yankees.
Well.
You know, pardon my dirty mouth, but yeah, I mean, the Yankees come down South and turn around and go home. No, the Yankees live up North. The damn Yankees come down South, turn around and go home. Don't you shake that finger at me, woman. And the GD Yankees come down South and stay.
Right. And they come down South and stay after they retire and vote against raising any kind of taxes to pay for schools.
Right. And tell you how bad the roads are.
Yeah, right. And then tell you how bad the roads are. But, the thing is my gut feeling about the caller was that she would have been absolutely perfect as one of the carry handlers in 2004. That kind of advice lost Kerry the election. The be nice, the don't use any strong language.
But she
all
was
that is complete bull stuff.
Yeah, but she was disgusted with Kerry. She doesn't like Kerry.
Well, she may not, but I bet you 10-1 she would have given him the be nice advice.
Well, and see, that's another thing about the disconnect in this country, Peter. I have talked at length, and some people get it, some people don't, about that little group that I like to call the Stump Licker Bunch. You know, when you're out in the country and it's molasses making time, yeah, there's some leftover stuff, and you generally, you know, back in the old South, it would be left in a hollowed out stump, and it would ferment there, and yellow jackets and ants and flies and whatever buzz all over, and it'd ferment all the heck, and you know, you slip out there on a Saturday night and you get you a couple of dippers full, and next thing you know, you're blind, crazy ass drunk.
Well, that's
and you're mean, and it's mean drunk too.
Yes, it's mean drunk too.
And the Stump Liquor Bunch is a gang that I don't think the Carryites or God bless them, our well-meaning brothers and sisters to the North really understand.
Nope, they don't fully get it. And you don't get anywhere by using a kinder or gentler vocabulary. You have to say it in kind.
Yeah, and because when you're sitting there being kinder and gentler, you're looking down and, I mean, dang, there's a pearl-handled knife sticking out from betwixt my ribs. What'd you want to go and do that for? And the Stump Liquor Bunch standing there laughing.
Right. And sarcasm works. You know, Bush has been elected, well, has stolen the election a second time. How's that working out for you so far?
That's real good for you, ain't it?
Yeah, right. But you know, there's no harm in calling a spade a spade as we say it. It just has to be done. We are literally at war. We are dealing with the masters of spin, and it is high time that we came out using the common man's vocabulary and stopped this mess about he misspoke or he clarified. The damn man lied.
Look, he's lying again, Mabel. You know, right.
Lied has a real resonant impact with people.
And there's
all the other words are meaningless. They go in one ear and out the other.
And well, you know, and that's the thing with that. I mean, that's why we try to sort of aim our little internet antenna to the South. And we get, you know, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from people saying, you know, I didn't know that there was that kind of good common sense in the South anymore.
Right. Right.
But, you know, more than anything, Southerners who routinely, year in, year out, decade in, decade out, century in, century out, we are the poorest people in the country.
Well, Bob, I didn't know I was poor until I got older because everybody around me was poor.
Right.
We were all the same.
You know,
I had no clue we were poor until I started going to, you know, the little school out here in the country closed. I started going to school in Tallahassee.
But when you're
rich people.
Right. But when you're poor, all you've got is your honesty.
Well, this is true. This is true.
And if so-called northern liberals or northern elitists put off Southerners, it's because it feels like a challenge to their credibility.
Well, you know, just don't even bother try to tell me how to talk to blue collar, baby. I have lived it all my life.
Right.
I know how to speak to them. And she had one very good point, and I'll say it again, and that is not is that we can't do Christian bashing because they will shut down instantly.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm one of them. And that's one of the things that offends me about some of the other shows. Not everyone differentiates it. And I despise it, that there has to be differentiated between the real Christians and the fake Christians. I mean, the words almost become meaningless.
Well, and there's kind of a snobbery in it, in that all by itself, Peter, and I'm guilty of it. You know, the fact that I would stand here and I would judge that, you know, Jerry Falwell, you're going to hell, but Jim Wallace, you're not. You know, but I feel like I have to do that based upon what I learned growing up.
Well, you're pointing out the facts, and it's got to be done. And it has to be done using real words and clear vocabulary. Nothing wrong with that. Don't worry about social baggage that goes along with various words. We get what the various words mean. No one's thinking that you're calling them an idiot because you're calling Bush an idiot. The only way they think you're calling them an idiot is if you say, you're an idiot.
For voting for Bush.
Theology down here. We understand sentence structure for crying out loud. Get me a break, woman.
got that part worked out. But the other thing I think that is not gotten in this, you know, she was amazed, bless her heart. She was amazed to hear the story of the John Kerry knife in the Bible thing. And that was real.
The lukewarm bit, that was the thing.
The business where, I mean, what the Republicans did to John Kerry in West Virginia and Arkansas. That's the only.
Oh, the knife in the Bible, yes.
Yeah, the pamphlet. Right. John Kerry going to get your Bible.
Yeah, going to come take your Bible. That's the kind of people that we're dealing with. And, you know, you just have to differentiate the only thing, you just have to differentiate between the two if you're going to get them to listen.
And but the other thing is, I don't think it's unfair in that circumstance when they are coming at you and they start it. You know, I'm a real big peace guy. Don't want to run around starting any fights. But when somebody takes a swing at me, I reserve the right to channel.